The church's music from the 20th century. The 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
You might have noticed it if you go into the average church, or let's just say you spend a lot of time going into average churches on Sunday morning. At first, it may not strike you, but then eventually, the cumulative effect is undeniable. You will notice that there are far more women than men in the pews or in the worship space on any given Sunday at the average church, especially in America. Why is that? And if it is a problem, and it seems to be a problem, is it a new one or an old one? Joining us to talk about men and women in the church over the next half hour of Issues Etc. on this Wednesday afternoon, Terry Mattingly, he's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. He's actually written two columns on men in the church, and he's also founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
You have devoted two columns to the subject of either the dearth of men in churches or the overabundance of women, but I think it's probably the former rather than the latter. Why?
It's certainly the former, and in fact, I think it's very important for people to realize that the author that I featured in these two columns, when he talks about the feminization of the church, he's not talking about the ordination of women or a host of other modern issues, although he's a traditional Catholic and he would oppose those. He's talking about something completely different, and in fact, he would argue that some of the most feminized churches that are out there are actually evangelical and even Pentecostal Protestant churches, some of whom don't ordain women. He's talking more about the style and the content of the faith and also what churches seem to consistently portray as ideal Christian behavior. And he quite frankly says, and in his book, The Church Impotent, The Feminization of the Church, and the lectures that I got recordings of and based my columns on, stress this over and over. The church seems to consistently tell men that in order to be good Christians, they must behave more like women. Now, we can talk about that, but frankly, I thought this was a much undercovered story. In the fact that it's become kind of like the air we breathe. It's become something that is so normal, we don't even notice it anymore. But especially at the level of family life and in terms of attempting to raise children in a faith and have them choose to continue to practice it, Leon Pottles, points to a lot of evidence that this is a theme running through young men abandoning the faith, fathers abandoning the faith, and thus you have families without a strong father figure who is active in the church attempting to get male and female children to go to church, and the whole thing just begins to cycle, if that makes any sense. I thought this was important, and I brought it up, and boy, oh boy, have I gotten letters about this ever since these columns started running.
What has been the response? I'm curious.
Well, first of all, a lot of people, you get this common thing where people just read the headline and then they don't read the columns. That happens a lot. A lot of people saw this as an actual attack on the Roman Catholic Church, which is ironic since the person at the heart of the columns is himself a very conservative traditional Roman Catholic, and he's criticizing his church, but he is by no means singling his church out for attack. Although from a point of history, since he believes this trend began in the Middle Ages, and specifically in Europe, to some degree, you have to deal with the history of the Roman Catholic Church, since it's so powerful there, then Protestantism comes along and picks up what he sees are some of these themes that are problematic. And basically, from there on out, he would argue Western Christianity, with an emphasis on Europe and North America, and to a lesser degree, Latin America, has problems that you do not see in Christianity in the East and, for the most part, in Asia and Africa. He thinks this is primarily a European and North American issue.
If I've actually interviewed Pottles many times since that book came out, and I've noticed that while he kind of treats it in a sociological manner, he does have what he believes are some causes, some basic causes. How would you describe, in a simple way, because it's not a simple problem, it's a very complex historical problem, but how would you describe, in a simple way, what has got us to this point from the Middle Ages on?
Well, I think the main thing listeners need to understand is that he's saying that in Europe, there was a major problem with a lot of issues related to men, primarily things like violence and alcohol and carousing and whatever. Priests, at the same time, wanted to kind of portray that the proper behavior of good Christians was to be docile, to be subservient, and to be obedient specifically to the church. When you begin to get into the Protestant Reformation and other rebellions against the church, you at times had an even stronger stress that people are not supposed to kind of be reacting on their own. They're supposed to just follow the priests and be good Christians. Pottles says over and over that, in effect, this was a group of men, the priests, asking the church in general to behave in a manner that culture at that point would have already have identified as feminine. Feminine in relationship to the church. At that point, all kinds of things start happening in both culture and in theology. He says this becomes kind of justified in theology. He even traces this into the thought of C.S. Lewis, which I thought was kind of provocative. Lewis's famous statement that in relationship to a transcendent male God, all Christians are feminine. Now throw that statement out into a group of people and watch the arguments begin. But just as important, he begins to see this influencing worship. He begins to see it influencing art, sacred art, and hymnody. And at a very crucial point in the sacramental system, he said, basically, men stopped wanting to go to confession. Because in effect, priests were asking them to come in and submit themselves in a way that men increasingly began to identify as feminine behavior, that they have to go in and confess their sins. Now, I should stress that Pottles is totally accepting the necessity of the sacrament of confession within the Roman Catholic Church and in its sacramental system. He's saying that that then becomes just another barrier between men and the church. In other words, if men haven't gone to confession much in their lives, they haven't gone to confession in a long time, they don't want to go. It's humbling. It's distressing. Then on the Protestant side, I think the theme that our listeners would understand is what some people have called the Jesus is my boyfriend school of worship music, and worship turning in essentially to kind of an emotional experience with hands in the air, waving around, weeping, crying, and quite frankly, a lot of men are sitting there on the sideline going, what the heck is this all about? Whereas when you look at world religion, the faiths that do well attracting men are faiths that emphasize sacrifice and discipline and fasting and hard regimens of private prayer and things that, quite frankly, are really hard to do. And in Islam would be an example. He notes over and over, and I don't just say this because I'm a convert to Orthodoxy, he notes that the Eastern churches, both Catholic and Orthodox, are some of the only places that you will see more men than women in many, if not most, worship services. Coincidentally, of course, you have male priests and clergy in there, but you also don't have the celibacy issue, which he deals with in ways that are controversial. I'm reminded of a statement I made long ago in a conversation with Catholic friends. I've always been convinced that the Catholic Church will ordain married men to the priesthood when that is requested by conservative Catholics, not by liberal Catholics. And Pottles thinks that it's crucial that many men in pews today just don't feel they can relate to priests, that those priests don't have anything in common with them in the terms of the lives they've led or the lives they're living, and they just don't identify with those men at the altar.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. On the other side of the break, he mentioned his Orthodoxy. What accounts for the difference between the Western Church and the Eastern Church on this development of men and the church? Stay tuned. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Messiah Lutheran, Seattle, Washington. Grace Lutheran, McPherson, Kansas. St. Paul's Lutheran, Bridgeport, Nebraska. Our Savior Lutheran, Raleigh, North Carolina. St. Paul Lutheran, Hancock, Maryland. Messiah Lutheran, Keller, Texas. St. John's Lutheran, Maple Grove, Minnesota. Grace Lutheran, Parker, Colorado. And Our Redeemer Lutheran, Harrington, Kansas. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Memoria Press invites all Issues Etc. listeners to explore our Simply Classical curriculum, a set of full-year academic curriculum packages for children with learning challenges. Our classical writing program and our Christian studies are now based on your favorite CPH Bible storybooks. To learn more, visit classicalspecialneeds.com and use promo code LPR to save on your initial purchase. That's classicalspecialneeds.com.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking about men in the church. Terry Mattingly is our guest, founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Before the break, Terry, you mentioned your particular confession of faith, Eastern Orthodoxy. What accounts for the difference between that and the Western Church? Is it just the cultural isolation of the East from this development of the West? Is it the fact that the East did retain, for the most part, a married clergy? What is it?
Well, yes, all of that is involved, but perhaps another way to look at it is as a matter of art. He said that if you simply look at how the church portrayed Jesus in its sacred art, from the medieval period on, Catholics tended to focus on the Sacred Heart of Jesus, this very emotional issue with the upturned face, and features that a lot of people, frankly, identify as feminine, but also that you have this suffering Christ, that Christ is on the cross suffering for us, and that through that comes our salvation. The church in the East had a completely different image, and that image is Christus Victor, the victorious Christ. When you go to an Eastern church at Easter, what you hear over and over is Christ is risen from the dead, trampling down death by death, and upon those in the tombs bestowing life. You have this strong image of Christ breaking the gates of hell and dragging people out of the tombs in a victory over death itself. Now, Pottles would simply say that that is a more masculine image. Christ the King, Christ the victorious soldier defeating death. That sounds more masculine than the suffering Christ with the Sacred Heart exposed on his chest. And I can't stress too much, Pottles is not rejecting what that says in terms of the actual theological content of those images. He's talking about the images themselves and how men receive them and relate to them and react to them. The East just has a completely different approach to the masculinity of Christ in terms of the salvific experience and salvation. And yes, and then again, you have those married priests and their families, you know, at the heart of church life. There's no way around that.
You had mentioned the Jesus is My Boyfriend love songs that permeate American evangelicalism. You know, they've changed their melodies, they've changed their genre of music, but they've pretty much stayed on that very theme. And while there's a place for Jesus, lover of my soul, something along those lines, what strikes me, Terry, is the degree to which the other hymnic musical aspects have been almost intentionally taken out of hymn books and hymnals, the military, those kind of, well, just to be quite honest, maybe to say it neutrally, violent images mm-hmm. that were often found in the sturdy old hymns. Talk about that.
Well, a mighty fortress is our God would have to be right up there at the top of hymnody from an era for Lutherans. Am I correct?
Yes.
I mean, that's a marching down the aisle with the banners flying hymn. And there are many others that fall into that category. That's quite different from the entire world of praise and worship music, which is very individual-centered. It's I instead of our. It's emotive. It's feelings-based rather than kind of action-based. And even though we think of these types of evangelical and Pentecostal churches as growing and being alive in comparison to a lot of liberal or progressive churches they might be, but he argues if you walk in those churches and look around, you will see men there, but you will see the ratio being very, very high of women, and that these services once again tend to view the faith primarily as an emotional experience rooted in feelings and expressing your feelings, whereas the faiths that do well with men tend to be action-driven, discipline-driven. And even he notices that he thinks churches should be forming more ministries that allow men to actually physically act in ways to protect people, to help people. And I asked him about a famous example within Protestantism that was quite successful. Churches that were beginning to start ministries that allowed men to come in on the weekends and fix people's cars. You know, if people couldn't afford, if the poor couldn't afford to have their cars repaired, bring them by our church. Yes, we'll ask you to sign a waiver since we're not dealing here with legal mechanics and all that. But let our men who have demonstrated a skill at this fix your car for you. Serve Jesus by fixing cars. But of course, really what you're doing there is you're serving the church and Christ by helping the poor. but you happen to be fixing cars. He talks about protective ministries that used to exist where men would help protect other people's families when there was times of distress, or actively do things to help broken families and help the poor in ways that are so much more, I don't know, action-driven than what you tend to see churches doing today. So once again, emotion versus action, kind of suffering and subservient actions compared to strength and bravery and courage being key things this church would stress over and over. And in the end, he said, the church used to talk about salvation as a way of achieving honor, that the goal of life was at the end of life to hear your Lord and King say, well done. You are worthy of honor. You are worthy. Through the grace of Christ and through your own actions, you have been brave, and thus you are honored. That's just not the sort of thing you hear the church talk about today.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. He's also founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thank you very much.
Thanks for your time.
Hour two of Issues Etc. today. We continue Issues Etc. Reformation Week. We're talking about Luther's inner circle, dealing with those few people who were in one way or another influential, instrumental in Luther's Reformation career. We come to Luther's pastor, Johannes Bugenhagen, on the other side of the break. Dr. Kurt Hendel of the Lutheran School of Theology will be our guest. Issues Etc. Reformation Week continues right after this.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Wildwood, Missouri is a proud sponsor of Issues Etc. And if you enjoy the relevant, Christ-centered teachings presented on this program, then you should come and join us at St. Paul's on Sundays at 9 a.m., where you will hear sermons that proclaim Jesus Christ and Him crucified for our sins, and enjoy in-depth Bible studies to help us grow as disciples. For more information, check us out at stpaullutheranwildwood.org.